like to share these recordings with you.
Hey, Marmac family. Welcome back to the Maintainer Podcast, where we highlight the voices and stories powering the Mid-Atlantic Regional Maintenance Center, the Navy's leader in ship repair and fleet readiness. I'm Jared Patch with the Marmac Public Affairs Office, and today's episode is a big one. We're bringing you a full deck of stories, from medical readiness to infrastructure, strategic leadership, small business, Navy heritage, and more. This episode captures the depth and variety of work happening across Marmac and the incredible people making it happen every day. So get some water, stretch those legs, and pace yourself, because this episode is a full-on marathon of Marmac goodness. Let's get into it. Ready, set, go. You're listening to the Maintainer Podcast. First up, what does medical readiness look like in today's Navy? Public Affairs Specialist Harrison Cox sat down with Marmac's new medical officer, Commander Brian Doc Doherty, to hear more about his role at our command and why wellness is about more than annual checkups.
So I am here to help with that, with primary care needs, questions, especially if people have things that are a little more urgent or things over which they're pretty frustrated. I can be a point of contact to help that along.
From the importance of self-care to making sure every sailor and civilian has the tools and support they need to stay mission ready, Commander Doherty gives us a look at how he's shaping a healthier workforce at Marmac. Because let's face it, you can't maintain ships if you're not maintaining yourself.
So, sir, if you could just give us a really quick introduction for yourself.
Greetings. I am Commander Brian Doherty, a medical officer with the Mid-Atlantic Regional Maintenance Center, Marmac.
And if you could just talk to us about your medical credentials and how basically you decided to go from a doctor to joining the Navy.
Absolutely. So I am a family practice doc, and that's a generalist. We usually think of military as being a little bit more focused on active duty members, but family practice covers all aspects of care from cradle to grave, and it takes the whole person into account. So really, generalist is, I guess, the best term for family practice. Doing residency in family practice, I knew I wanted to do something active with medicine, maybe a little bit different from the traditional career path that a family physician would take. And so I talked to the Navy at the tail end of residency and joined shortly after residency, direct accession to the Navy with the Officer Development School in Newport, Rhode Island.
Very nice, sir. And if you could just talk to us about basically what your role is going to be here for the dive locker and for all the sailors here at Marmac.
Marmac is a huge command, very, very big command, and we have to take care of our people, and that's where I come in to help. So as an undersea medical officer, I can do dive physicals and chamber treatments for things that come up with the diving community. Dive physicals and being an undersea medical officer is kind of like being a primary care physician for the divers. But in addition to that, looking after the health and readiness of Marmac as a whole involves trying to help everyone. So there's a lot of medical needs in the command, and many, many places have a shortage of personnel these days, and there's a lot of work to do. So I am here to help with that, with primary care needs, questions, especially if people have things that are a little more urgent or things over which they're pretty frustrated. I can be a point of contact to help that along and even see some things myself and try and get people seen and taken care of. So I guess my role is a little bit of a dual-headed nature. There's senior medical officer of Marmac and then undersea medical officer with the dive locker.
For the stigma around mental health and everything with the Navy and the military in general, what would you say to people that maybe have doubts about coming up to you or really anyone regarding mental health?
I would highly encourage everyone to press forward with talking with someone. Bottling things up is almost never a good idea. By human nature, we're social by nature, team-oriented by nature, especially in the Navy. You get things done with teams. And teams are made of people, and people are not robots. So we all have issues. No one is perfect. And it takes a ton of resiliency to fight the fight and to bring your best self to work. no one ever comes to work saying they want to do a bad job. It doesn't happen.
Right.
So, but all of us have challenges. And so anyone with anything that could be an issue, a source of stress or more, I would highly encourage to seek someone, anyone out, from a friend to chaplaincy to medical, fleet and family, military one source. All these resources are meant to help us. And what it comes down to at the end of the day, oftentimes it's making a human connection with someone who cares. I cannot stress that enough, to seek out help from someone, anyone, for help.
Makes sense. Yes, sir. I agree. Going back to education really quick, where did you go to medical school?
I did medical school in Dublin, Ireland.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Which I absolutely loved. I was able to see the old family farm, meet the relatives.
Wow.
I had wanted to live in Ireland for a very long time, and it was kind of a way to kill two birds with one stone, get med school done and live in Europe and Ireland for a bit. So that was extremely educational, to see the world from a different perspective and gain an appreciation for getting O'Conus.
You're right. That is awesome. Okay, sir. And if you could just give us some quick health advice, anything that you think would be helpful for the listeners of our podcast.
Absolutely. I think you have to look after yourself and your own health. Everyone in the Navy, and I mean everyone, is a leader. But you're no good to anyone if you don't bring your best self to work and you aren't comfortable in your own skin and ready to face the challenges of the day. It's amazing how true that is. I learned that as part of a Navy leadership class, and I think it's so true, where you have to make sure you're in a good place before you lead others. And all of us are leaders, so all of us need to look after ourselves. And for people, it means different things. It could be a daily workout. It could be a meditation, a walk at lunch. But doing something to stay true to yourself is of paramount importance to bring your best self to work and for resiliency, to fight the long fight. So whether that means journaling or getting immunized or talking with someone about some stress or seeking out a higher level of care if things really are a little more acute and in depth, I would encourage all of that. Make sure that you are in a good headspace every day as much as possible.
I love that, sir. And that actually brings us into our next question here. When you're not in uniform, what is your favorite way to unwind and to practice self-care?
I got a little bit of a jack of all trades, master of none. So I love to read a ton. I'm a pretty avid reader, and work out. I've probably gotten a little less aggressive with my workouts as I get older, but still working out. And then going for walks with my wife and the dog. And also playing music. Those things really kind of take my mind to a different space, allow me to focus, but on things other than medicine and military.
Very nice. What do you play?
Here again, jack of all trades, master none. So a little piano, guitar, violin, drums.
Oh, wow.
Really good at nothing, but competent at a lot of things.
That's awesome. The whole band. That's very cool. Okay, sir. Well, again, thank you very much for your time. And we are very just grateful to have you here as a new addition to Marmac. So thank you.
Grateful for having me. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Harrison. And thanks, Doc. Leadership isn't just about making decisions. It's about navigating change, especially when the waters are anything but calm. In times of shifting tides, a clear vision isn't just helpful, it's essential. That's where Sean Greenaway comes in. As Marmac's acting executive director, Sean has the tough job of steering this command through uncertain seas, but he's no stranger to challenges.
As we look into that environment of completing our mission, because that hasn't changed, doing it with less people, which is a challenge, force shaping to get more efficient, to be able to accomplish the mission, has got my attention.
Public Affairs Specialist Oscar Pope had the opportunity to speak with Sean, who shared his perspective on the future of Marmac, from reshaping the workforce to interagency collaboration and streamlined efficiency. Sean takes us from his roots in Pittsburgh to his rise through the Navy ranks, sharing how those experiences shape his leadership style and help him to guide Marmac on the road ahead.
I'm Oscar Pope, Public Affairs Specialist, sitting here with Acting Executive Director Sean Greenaway. Sean, how are you?
Great. I'm great. It's a great day, and it's a great feeling to be here working at Marmac.
Thanks for taking the time to sit with us for this interview. I'm thinking of a city. It shares a sunny day like today here in Norfolk. It has over 446 bridges.
Oh,
what
yeah.
city am I thinking about, Sean?
You're thinking about my hometown, Pittsburgh, most likely.
You're right.
A lot of bridges.
You're right. Tell us a little bit more about your hometown.
So I came into the world in Pittsburgh in the early 60s. JFK was president at the time. Steel mills were in full swing. There was days during the daytime that with the air being stagnant, it would almost appear to be, you know, twilight or nighttime because of the smog and stuff like that. But that didn't happen an awful lot. But there was an awful lot of industry steel production going on as I grew up. My father was working in the mills. My mother was an RN. And back then, I think it was uncommon for two parents to work at the same time. But as time went on, of course, that had to be a thing for us. And so I have one older brother, two younger sisters, and three younger brothers. So we're pretty close, and my parents did what they could to provide for us. But it was a, I think it was a good childhood in those circumstances. And, you know, being from that area, of course, you know, the Pirates and the Steelers are big, big influences on us. And we really enjoy watching those teams. Of course, they're not doing so well right now, but, you know, fans are fans. So you do what you can. So I grew up, went to public schools. I started out in a private school and then went to public schools for most of my time there, mainly studying academic pursuits. But what I did was decided college wasn't right for me right out of high school. So 2 days after graduation, I joined the Navy and started this whole beautiful experience of working for the government and doing Navy things.
All right. So you joined the Navy out of Pittsburgh in 1981?
Yeah, it was 1981, and in June of 81, I went from the football field with a cap and gown to a plane 2 days later, heading to Great Lakes, doing boot camp.
Okay.
So, went through that experience. It was summertime, so that was nice, but I did get a taste of winter in Chicagoland because I had to go to A school right after, and that went all the way into the next spring almost, and then went out to my first ship.
Tell us about your college background. I know you just traveled just northeast of Pittsburgh in the city of Bristol. What college was there?
Okay, so that's Roger Williams University up there. And what I did was, when I was in the Navy during my first tour, I had a small break in service and actually got out and went to University of Pittsburgh for a little bit in pre-medicine, of all things. And then decided to reaffiliate. I was in the reserves and came back active duty. And then while I was doing a tour as an instructor up at SWAS, I was able to, you know, complete my undergraduate stuff up at Roger Williams. That's a nice campus, nice small town, nice college town up there. It was close to SWAS, and that made it very convenient to do that. So I completed that portion of my education up in Bristol.
So you've served as leading petty officer on multiple platforms, had experience with various types of leadership throughout your military career. And that brings us to the point of your acting ED. What is your vision for the organization over the next 5 years?
Well, so as we all know, with the new administration and some of the presidential memos and executive orders, there is a very strong effort to reduce the size of the federal government. And we're going through that every day now over the last 3 months, programs being rolled out to do such things, DRP, things like that. So as we look into that environment of doing, you know, completing our mission, because that hasn't changed, doing it with less people, which is a challenge, force shaping to get more efficient, to be able to accomplish the mission is got my attention, and how you do that. How you treat people fairly, but meet the parameters with the resources we have. And so the challenge is for each department and for shaping what we do to get to a point where we can meet those challenges with reduced workforce and the mission still being the mission. So in 5 years, you know, hopefully the drawdown, you know, stops here soon. We get to our goal, whatever that is. They haven't really clearly articulated that yet, but I think we're getting close. And then knowing what we have to work with, but we can't wait for that. We have to start doing that now. So we're looking at how we can get more efficient with what we have and also targeting, you know, maybe an 8 to 10% reduction as a parameter to plan to. Hopefully it's not that great, but to kickstart that process. And so that's what's getting our attention so that, you know, look out 5 years in the future, what we look like is a leaner, more efficient, but smaller organization that is able to meet those requirements in the enterprise, not just in our AOR. It's going to take the RMCs coming together, I think, a little bit more to get there.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that. So what do you think, what type of leadership style gets us to that point?
Well, so in my career, I've went through smaller organizations and larger organizations, and then, you know, going up through different positions. I subscribe to more of a coach kind of leadership, where you definitely make sure that everyone understands what the goals and what the requirements are, but you let people do their job. You let them do their job, and you don't micromanage. You help them, you know, get through processes. Not necessarily tell them how to do it, but tell them what the goal is, and have them work through that. I think that's that style of leadership in a change environment is very important. Change environment is key, because when you manage change, majority of change is actually, under the circumstances we are at especially, don't really occur successful enough in the aggregate. There's like up to 80% of changes that are attempted, I won't say fail, but they don't hit home on all the parameters they're trying to pin down. So we gotta be careful what we're doing there. And those kinds of leadership styles help with that.
Thanks for sharing that, Sean. So we talked about significant changes to the federal workforce, specifically here at Marmac. There's immense worry throughout the command. So how do you plan to manage the stress that comes with the decisions that need to be made, at the same time helping employees manage their stress?
Yeah, that's a tough one, because everyone has their own viewpoint and their feelings about what's happening, right? So from myself personally, I like to sort through, get the facts, be patient enough to wait until I have enough information to actually formulate an opinion on what's going on, and then stay mission focused on what I'm trying to accomplish. So that's how I manage stress. Try not to do everything in one day. That's never going to happen. You know, there's always going to be more to do. So have a work-life balance that makes sense for you, and just maintain a steady strain on things and get through it. There's other things that are available to people with employee assistance programs and things, if they want to reach out, if they are feeling, overwhelmed and things like that. And of course, I would encourage anyone to take advantage of those kinds of things. But in the command, what I try to project, and hopefully through the departments, is while change is happening around us, and a lot of it's occurring quickly, that we are transparent and we get the information out to people so they can, you know, feel like they're part of this process. We're all in this together, trying to accomplish what these changes are. And that stress normally rises when people feel like they're not getting the right kinds of information, or things are being held back, and that's not what we're doing at all. And so as we get the information, and as we understand what our orders are, basically, we get that out to folks so they can understand it too, and can become part of the solution set, you know, part of having the control of what happens here. So that, to me, is a great benefit to manage that impact. You know, but if someone's feeling overwhelmed and they need help, obviously support, you know, leadership supports all opportunities to accomplish that too.
Thanks, Sean. So, yeah, with your background in waterfront ops, which direction do you see Marmac going with the limited resources that we have?
Well, so that's kind of similar to, you know, the drawdown and where we see ourselves in 5 years. In waterfront ops, our organization is mainly contract maintenance oversight or contract management oversight, right? So we rely on a heavily matrixed organization of, you know, a project manager and other entities coming in from the various codes to form a team. And so the same thing applies here. One of the things that I think that helps when you're force shaping and you're looking at across the enterprise kinds of changes is almost taking a, like I'm used to the maneuver warfare concept, where you try to exploit the weaknesses of your enemy, and you do it in a quick and efficient manner. You're not just trying to, you know, slug it out through attrition. So in this environment, that requires, in maneuver warfare, it also requires you to push decisions down to the lowest level. Let people make decisions where decisions should be made. That helps with that kind of concept. Encouraging, that kind of activity, and not crucifying somebody if they make a wrong decision. Make sure they're, you know, prepared, trained, and equipped to make those kinds of decisions, but force it down to the lowest level. And key to that is then knowing what leadership, the expectations, the goal of leadership, what the goal of the command, what we're trying to achieve. If everyone knows what we're trying to achieve, what the mission expectations are, then they can do those kinds of things and make that happen. And then as we work together with other RMCs to look for efficiencies and things like that, you know, there's opportunities to, you know, force multiply off of that. Each RMC has a lot of the same kinds of entities in it. There might be opportunities to have one RMC focus on providing that service across the enterprise. The other RMCs can maybe relax and recapitalize those resources to other things and look at it from that perspective. So those are some of the things that they're taking up some of my time right now trying to figure out.
Yeah, you've got quite the history and the experience from boot camp until where you are now. So obviously there's been some failures along the way. What is a failure that you've experienced and how did it help you become the leader you are today?
Well, there's a lot of little things like, you know, when you're dealing with people as a young leader and you have a particular thought about doing something and it just goes way off course, you know, didn't work out the way you wanted it to. So, you know, some of those interpersonal relationship kind of things in shipboard environments, you know, what it taught me was to take a step back, look at what happened, try to understand why it happened, and then go at it from a different approach, you know, try to be more goal oriented in what you're trying to do, but also be respectful and, you know, treat people right. Those kind of things. One of the biggest things that was of concern was when we as an organization shifted from MSMO type contracting to MACMO type contracting. I wouldn't say it was a failure to do that because we changed over, but it was not as smooth as it could have been because I think the rudder order was given before the preparations were kind of in place to make a smooth transition. So, you know, learning from that, it's like once you understand where the organization's trying to go, do your research and get on board and start to become part of the solution. Don't wait for the direction. Look at the options and figure out what the best way ahead is so you're prepared to do those kinds of things. And, you know, that's a good takeaway from that shift over there. And it's a good way to approach what we're going into now. You know, we don't know what our resource bottom line is going to be. We don't really know what FY26 budget is going to look like right now. So we have to make some assumptions and formulate some ideas and plans to be able to take that on in a short period of time and not be floundering around trying to figure out what it is we should be doing.
If you want to leave the listeners with a final thought.
So it's an honor and a privilege to do what I'm doing right now. I don't take this lightly. I've been doing this for over 40 some years. I enjoy doing it. My biggest goal is to make sure that the people of Marmarack have what they need to be successful. That's what I try to keep in mind every day. What can I do to help people be more successful in what they do? And so that keeps me going. The same thing with supporting the fleet. You know, I was out there running those ships for quite some time, and I know the challenges that are in front of those folks. And whatever we can do as an organization to better help them be prepared for what they do, we're all about it. So, you know, trying to keep that attitude up and do that every day, it's going to make a difference.
That's a great advice. Thanks for your time today, Sean. It was such a pleasure to speak with you.
Well, I look forward to doing it again sometime. Enjoyed it. Thanks.
The legacy of the chief continues to be a cornerstone of Navy culture, and Marmarack is proud to carry that tradition forward. On April 1st, Navy Chief Petty Officers celebrated their 132nd birthday. Yes, 132 years of deck plate leadership, goat lockers, and sea stories. Leading up to the big day, Command Master Chief Dave Atkins spoke with a few of the retired chiefs here at Marmarack about their service, how they would describe the role of Chief Petty Officer, and what the anchors mean to them. The conversations were recorded and compiled in a video shown at the CPO birthday celebration. We have a few excerpts from the video to share, along with some audio captured at the birthday bash. Retired Senior Chief Grady Boulier was the guest speaker at the event and shared some wisdom with the new chiefs in the audience. You may remember our former commanding officer, Captain Jay Young, recalling this day in Episode 5 as one of his best days in command, as he was designated an honorary chief by the chief's mess. Let's take a listen.
All right. Hey, welcome. So this year we're trying to bring our retirees back into the fold and really get some wisdom and mentorship from those who really built a legacy for us to carry on. As it says up here in the CPO Creed, we honor the hat for those who went before us to put value into the anchors. And just want to get to know some retired chiefs and ask you some questions and we'll roll through it, all right?
originally enlisted in 1983, got out in 87 as a second class. I was a IC, finished with 23 years of service, retired in 2018 as a IC Master Chief.
Information Systems Technician Shanina Francis. I was, well, Information Chief. I was in the Navy for 20 years, and then I retired basically because I had breast cancer. So, you know, want to enjoy life.
Eric Lang, I was in the Navy on active duty for 12 years, and then I did 13 as a reservist. I was a ganger on submarines. I was in the Navy Hydronaut program. I did a lot of support for the EDO community in the last 7 years of my career. You could do something different every day. So it wasn't like the same routine in and out, and you could qualify anything you wanted. So I could be a pilot one day, surface controller, which is like an officer of the deck of the support ship, the next.
My name is Rona Jackson. I'm a retired Corpsman Master Chief. I served in the Navy for 31 years. Very proud and happy to serve.
Yeah, my name is Josh. I served 24 years on active duty. Retired as a YNC a year ago last month.
What's one word you would use to describe a Chief Petty Officer?
Mission focused. My word is mission focused. We are a mission first organization. I think there's wisdom to retaining the history and the heritage of our mission first organization. We are warfighters first. This is the military. It's the United States Navy. We've been kicking ass and taking names for a long time, and now's not the time to let up on the gas.
Inspiring. Do your best to always inspire and pull up.
Example. You are the example. Lead by example.
I would say a servant leader, and that's two words. So I say servant. When we say serve, we serve our sailors, we serve our department heads, we serve our triad, we serve the command, we serve the Navy. And that means mentoring, pouring into others, challenging them, holding them accountable when needed, because it makes them better. We're doing it from a place of empathy and love.
Foundation. Chiefs are the foundation of the Navy, the foundation of what we do. Junior sailors should be able to rely on their chiefs. Officers, the wardroom relies on the chief's mess. I know a lot of people say backbone. I like foundation, I think it's stronger. Backbone's easy to break, but a foundation is there. Everything's built upon the foundation.
So going back to your time as a chief and even now, what do the anchors mean to you?
I always think of the anchors in the context of when I was a junior sailor and what the chief was when I was just a fireman apprentice on the USS Proteus AS-19 in Guam back in the day. And it's funny because there were really excellent chiefs and there were some who were not excellent. And I was raised under a not excellent chief and I didn't respect him as a person. And I know this sounds like it's counterintuitive, but my point is, I remember thinking, if I get to wear those anchors, I'm not going to be anything like that guy. And I had other examples on the ship that I pointed to that I wanted to be like. So the anchors mean to me, more than anything, the elevation of excellence.
You know, growing up, coming through the ranks, you always looked at the chief as that person, right? So you had some good ones, you had some bad ones. But you learn from each one. The anchors to me meant that I had a heavy load of responsibility to take care of both my officers and my enlisted and try my best to make good decisions.
The anchor to me represents core, honor, courage, commitment, value, accountability. That's what the anchor represented to me. USN, you know, unity within the mess, service, navigation, don't forget where you came from.
When I think of anchors, I think of the good book. There's a scripture that talks about the anchor holding us safe and secure. So when I think of chiefs and the anchor, I think of the strength, the unity, the ability to hold down the fort, to be the backbone, to ground our Navy, our sailors, the mission. So I think of strength and I think of solidarity with that.
The anchor to me is a symbol that represents knowledge, strength, guidance, For me, it always symbolized somebody I could go to when I needed help, regardless of what type of help it was, whether it's professional help, personal help, somebody who knows what the heck they're talking about when it comes to their rating and their job, somebody who could just help me with life advice, somebody who had been there, done that, and was there to help.
That's why you go through the initiation, is to have confidence in your uniform and in yourself, knowing that your seniors were the one who selected you for Chief Petty Officer. They thought something about you. So remember that, and I hope you enjoy the Navy as well as I did. I love coming back. I'm so happy that Chief Foster invited me back to speak, and I hope the encouraging words was 28 years ago, we were proud to be Chiefs, and I see that we're still proud to be a Chief Petty Officer.
But I thought I kind of feel like I cheated a little bit because I didn't go through the season. But I've seen three tours, I've seen many seasons, I've sat through many pinning ceremonies. I know what goes into to making a chief. I know the pride that you have when the message comes out. It's one of my favorite days when I get to go with the CMC and the XO and tell people that they made chief and watch the season go through and see the finish. It is one of the best traditions we have in our Navy. I really hope it never, never, ever goes away.
Next, we hear from Infrastructure Management Division Head Dave Shutter. What exactly is infrastructure?
You know, in reality, infrastructure for the organization is everything that does not fix a ship. So from your computers, how you come to work, where you come to work, where you sit, if your walls are painted, if your lights are on, if your computer's working at your desk, you name it, it belongs in the infrastructure world.
We learn more about the logistical challenges of managing facilities concerns across 9 buildings on 3 different bases with only 7 people, and why Marmac is fortunate to have our own dedicated team to handle issues in-house. Dave also catches us up on the progress made by the cybersecurity and security teams since our last IG inspection, lets you know who you can thank for your new laptop and printer, and fills us in on the current state of ongoing projects affecting the command. Oh, and Dave, sorry about all the coffee grounds. Over to you, Oscar.
All right. Well, hey, guys, welcome. We're here with the one and only Dave Shutter. You know, Dave has many hats over cybersecurity, facilities, security, IT. What else? Am I leaving one out?
That's it.
That's it? Man with many hats and one head. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much.
It was very difficult getting you here, but we finally got you in the seat, and we're going to dive into some things in your areas of expertise of cybersecurity, IT, facilities. We want to go over some events that has been happening in these areas, and we want your take and your expertise and helping us navigate and understanding those different codes.
Absolutely.
So let's jump right into it. First, give us a little bit of background about yourself.
Spent 20 years in the Navy. I was a retired gunner's mate. Had a short stint as an LDO. Was supposed to go be the stow on the Mobile Bay. Turned it down, decided to retire. Joined when I was 17, retired when I was 37. Spent about a year in the private industry. Biggest claim to fame was Planner's Peanuts. I was the maintenance manager of Planner's Peanuts and the trail mix in a plastic bag that you eat today. I installed the first equipment to make that out in Suffolk, Virginia.
So that's pretty interesting. You talk about the maintenance man at Planner Peanuts.
Yep.
That probably gives you a lot of credibility here as being over the facilities department.
No. It was more so the equipment out there. You know, in reality, infrastructure for the organization is everything that does not fix a ship. So from your computers, how you come to work, where you come to work, where you sit, if your walls are painted, if your lights are on, if your computer's working at your desk, you name it, it belongs in the infrastructure world.
Have you dealt with many inspections because of the state of this building?
Oh, absolutely. The hardest part I have with a lot of it is you speak of the inspections. 6 IGs, I think, in the last 20 years. All the other inspections that come in, the FMAAs. We've had CCIs come in from the cyber intel world. We've had all these things, and it's always shocking to me as I led the majority of the IGs. All these outsiders come here and they say, man, your building's beautiful. Man, it's really nice in here. And there's so many times I'd say, hey, can we record that real quick and throw it out over the 1MC? I think over time, the buildings have greatly improved in the appearance of where we work every day.
I've personally seen some improvements around the buildings. Congrats to you in having a hand in that. But let's talk about this past IG inspection. Over this past IG inspection, Marmec has had an opportunity to improve in some areas. How are you addressing these areas, specifically security, performance, and readiness?
I will first start with cyber. It's the easiest one to get out. A lot of people don't understand, but in cyber, we have this program called RMCNet. Don't quote me, but all the techs in 200 and some other places, mainly in Code 200, have computers that are non-NMCI computers. They're standalones. There's 100 plus of these computers. Don't quote me on that number. Years ago, we did an IT court, and everybody was supposed to tell us about these computers. The biggest thing in this program is we want to make sure that those computers are stigged, patched, and kind of like your home computer. To give an example, the Norton antivirus. You don't want to get a virus on those computers. They're not being checked anywhere because they're not hooked to NMCI. So those computers, the techs could take them down. They troubleshoot on board a ship. The last thing we want is a virus on one of those assets going to a ship and putting a virus in a system on a ship, whatever they're troubleshooting. We have one that I think is still working on like a Windows 7 version. Then there's a couple that are even older than that. So therefore, we have to create this server, standalone server in cyber, that monthly checks these computers to make sure there's nothing bad on these computers, any viruses, so we don't go and put it onto the ship. Probably 2 years ago, we had the only, out of all the RMCs, the only authority to operate fully certified RMCNet group to be able to perform this function. And if you go back 3 years, we were the first cyber team to ever pass an IG inspection because we had the only ATO, because that was a big deal back then. Since the last IG and this IG, make long story short, CNRMC with NAVC cyber team decided, hey, Marmec did this. Let's get them an external connection. We'll install some stuff in their super room, and they'll be the ones doing this for all the RMCs. And we're going to call it RMCNet Enterprise. Of course, we go back with, hey, you know, we don't have the money for these things. You know, a server for that's about 10, 15 grand. I don't have the manning to do this for the entire enterprise. But how are we going to connect to these RMCs that are overseas that don't have NMCI? So, you know, there was a lot of time and effort went into it. They put a PowerPoint together, shot it off to NAVC headquarters cyber team. They said, yeah, go do great things. So we spent about a year and a half trying to build this thing up. And then the IG showed up this past December and said, nope, that is illegal. So everything we worked on to get forward was completely shut down. So I will tell you, the cyber team led by Chris Fitzsimmons, the ISSM, Eric Hamm, that's just so you all are supposed to know who those people are when an IG comes, had 40-some cards. Sorry, I don't know off the top of my head. Well, they're down to 5 open cards. They've already completely reconfigured the RMCNet world with IT because both of them are involved. We are just waiting now for the confirmation that we have our approved way ahead. We have completely put to the side the way we were doing this for the enterprise. We're going back to, we're just doing this for Marmec because everything we were told was wrong. The cyber team was able to produce. We showed all the OQE that we were told to do this, and it just went on deaf ears, and we failed in the cyber world. But they're already fully back up and running. I don't even think it's been, 4 months since the IG, and all their cards but 4 are closed. So cyber team has been pumping through it, working hard, and we're already on a better path ahead. Now we'll talk security. Same situation. Probably, I want to say they had like 60-some cards and failed. So to take a deep dive into everything between Captain Young and leadership, taking a deep dive, we've had separate looks come in. We actually have a security manager from one of the warfare centers, PhD, here with us right now for 3 weeks to give us a third set of eyes. And I think it comes down to a lot of business of the past and where we came from. If you took the majority of the cards, a lot of it is detailed around the personnel security world and your security clearance. As we take the annual security fresher training every year, it tells you there's reportable criteria. If this happens to you, so this is what I hope everyone catches out of this. If you did any of these things or any of these things happened to you, they are reportable to security. What got security into a hot wash on this last one was the fact that there was a lot of things are being found that people, A, didn't report, or B, the previous security team reached out to you, say, hey, they found this on you. Where's your paperwork? And nothing was ever followed through on numerous cases. Therefore, the CAF came in and just revoked their clearance, and they're still working here. They found 37 people in that situation. All 37 have been since cleared, but now they're still working through. We got to go through every civilian, military, and contractor in the organization and look into a true deep dive into their clearance to make sure everything is in place for them. I want to say we're probably 40 to 50% through that right now. Long way ahead, because on the same note, you know, our personnel security, when before the IG showed up, the personnel security lead and one other person had retired 10 months prior to them showing up. So there's two vacancies in there. The new personnel security manager just checked in the week before the IG started, and she's cleaning house. There's been numerous all hands or all managers emails letting them know why they're getting these different emails and stuff to get a better way ahead. But when we really look and deep dive into what the majority of these clearance issues were, was still happening, it comes back to the onboarding process. And I think we're working, we've reached out to every RMC, we've reached out to headquarters, warfare centers. The ways of the past on how somebody onboarded have changed on what they can and can't give them, i.e. as far as goes to clearance. We can no longer give someone an interim clearance like you have in the past. People were onboarded without truly having a true screening done, not to their fault, not to leadership's fault. We went from the JPAS program to the DIS program, very little training on it. Some policy has changed on how you can and can bring someone on board. Use the military experience. They're not supposed to leave for boot camp until they have a fully adjudicated background. We're getting sailors here who have been in the Navy for 4 or 6 years and never touched it. So there's faults all over to not point fingers. We just want to clean up our house, and we're well ahead on doing that.
So you talked about security, and you provided how cybersecurity is pivotal in protecting the data, especially from viruses and things, and how you got 40 or so cards down to now 5.
Right.
You were dealing with other things. Let's look at facilities.
Woo!
Hot topic, right? So facilities has been going through multiple projects, some projects implemented by Marmac and some projects implemented by NAFAC. Can you talk about those projects, who owns them, where are we at in terms of progress, and how has it impacted Marmac since they started?
Let's just start with, so people really understand the benefit they have here at Marmac, unlike any of the other 332 tenant commands on Naval Station Norfolk. We are the only command on this installation that has their own facilities team. The benefit of that is, and the benefit of what a lot of people who've never left Marmac, specifically LF-18, is this group has always been here. The not understanding or not appreciating the fact that if you go to any of the other 300 plus tenants on this organization, if they have a toilet clogged, they wait weeks for NAVFAC to come unclog it. If they have a water fountain that doesn't work, they wait weeks for the water fountain. A building of this size, we were told last September, and leadership has decided to not go the NAVFAC route, because if you notice, the heat and air conditioning in LF-18 is pretty nice. We literally have a contract with Train to provide heat and air conditioning to this building. Now, there's some issues with a couple devices going on right now. It's summer. We haven't had the AC on since last year. System's trying to regulate out. We'll get there. But when the leadership and I sat down with the public works officer for the region, they wanted us to do away with that contract, and they wanted NAVFAC to take that contract over. We said, absolutely not. And leadership at the time also said, you know what, we're going to add CP200. There are still issues at CP200, but this year has been the best year, in my opinion, of the environment and CP200. It's not there yet. Moving forward, getting a couple new air handlers placed in that overhead over there, and we're going to be there. It is an industrial area. Garage doors are open. Everyone has their little makeshift ACs and their little self-made offices and stuff, but it's getting better. But with that comes, you know, now we have all these other little things, bugs in LF-18. One, it's a work environment. It's not a house. You and I, if we had a bugs in our house, we're going to stop at Home Depot on our way home. We're going to grab some bug killer. We're going to spray away because we know what our families are allergic to or not allergic to, susceptible to or not susceptible to. If you have pets, dogs. So because the mass amount of people in here, we don't know everyone's history medically. So when they come in and we can't just go out and buy everything you would buy off the shelf out in town. You know, they have their OSHA requirements, safety requirements, and what they can and can't do. We've taken a round turn on that. We tried to last year when it was really bad. NAFAC was coming over, their bug team was coming over and treating the high volume areas of bugs. And I think we got it under control. You don't see this many anymore. We tried to go out and get our own pest service contract. NAFAC shot that down. They didn't want that. So we couldn't force that subject. But it also enlightened to the NAFAC world that we need help in this building. You know, compiled with the fact that we have a Bayview Cafe up front, there's a lot of trash and things that come associated to a restaurant type thing. LF-18, a lot of people don't know, is on a sewage tank. The tank gets pumped. And it's a scary thing when NAVFAC comes to work on that pump in the back of the building. Two decks down underneath that back platform loading dock, when they would lift that manhole cover to go in there to make repairs, they did throw 4 bug bombs in and come back 2 hours later. Because the walls crawl with palmetto or cockroaches. So every time they would bomb these tanks to get down there and work on that stuff, guess where them bugs would run? Right in this building. Every time they spray and they come in, we call them up and say, hey, we're starting to see one or two here and there. They'll come over and they'll treat. But what does that do? It brings them out of the woodworks to where they're hiding. And then we see more for like a week or two and we get rid of them. That's where we are. You know, that's like one of the biggest thing, the bugs. But, you know, I think we got a better control on it than we were a year ago.
Talk about the quay wall. The quay wall, the parking.
Woo!
Where are we at on that?
So the quay wall. Everyone knows many years ago, the back bulkhead was collapsing in. We never lost a car back there, but we were getting real close. So they came in and they blocked off it was quite a few years. They blocked off the whole back row of parking. It was 122 spots we lost. Then they took away a bunch more, gave us the side parking lot. So when NAVFAC did the contract to do that quay wall, a lot of people don't understand that quay wall project started all the way over by the marina and came all the way around past LF-18 over to the air lamp building at the end of the road. When you award these type contracts, it's got to be MILCON and it goes to a higher level to get approval. At the same time, the airfields, the airstrips on the installation, they're very severely deteriorated as well. So they combined both contracts to do the airstrips and the quay wall under the same contract. And the reason you know that, why that's so important, is up until probably 2 or 3 weeks ago, you didn't hear a helicopter over LF-18 for quite some time. They're back. If you've been outside, walk around the building, now that it's nicer weather out, you will notice the helicopters are flying again. Because for the last year, since they started that project last year, the helicopters were put over to a different facility, flying out of that facility. They haven't stopped flying. They just weren't flying behind us because they had to finish this flight line out here. At the same time, they were working on the quay wall. It appears that it's done, but there's an entire lane back there that still has no concrete in it. And more importantly, there's no safety, a safety bollard to keep when you park there that you don't drive into the water. They have to finish the airfield that they're working on the other side of the base where the helicopters were operating for the last year. Once they finish that, they're coming back over here and going to finish that roadway out there, put the bollards in, paint the parking lot, and we'll be good to go. They are telling us hopefully by midsummer they will be there, and which is ahead of schedule because when this whole project started, pending, you know, everyone knows a contract can be added to, moved on, and things like that. And we're trying to get a definitive answer on the contract end date right now. But when this all started last year, the contract end date was November 30th of 25. So if they turn that parking lot over to us in the middle of the summer, we're well ahead of schedule.
I think a lot of people wanted to know the actual end date. November 30th is what I'm familiar with. And yeah, you mentioned.
And that's for the airfields and everything associated with the airfields as well. It's not just the Quaybol.
Is it important for Marmec employees to understand that even though there is an overall contract end date, the contract has many phases attached to it.
It does.
And one project can finish a little bit sooner than another. So just because you don't see some work going on doesn't mean that the contract isn't progressing.
Correct.
Right.
And you know, the chain of command was very supportive. We held that contract up in reality. You know, when they told us we had to park on the other side of the fence line, there was no safe walkway to walk from there to here. We would not let them even put a fence up until they had a safe walkway from one side to the other. So, you know, there's been things that we've pushed back and helped us to an advantage as well. We did get some parking lot back down by, I guess that's the north end of the parking lot. We did get about 30 spots back a few weeks ago when we asked, hey, there's no more road back there that needs to be put in. There's no safety bollards. Let's take that whole corner and give it back to us. And they did.
So, you know, just to summarize, we've talked about IT, cybersecurity, facilities, and projects.
I'm going to say one more thing about facilities, please.
Sure.
It is hard to know what's broke out there if we don't put a trouble ticket in and tell someone. Please don't walk by something and say, oh, someone else will report that. If you haven't heard about Arquebus, please get on our SharePoint page, scroll to the bottom, see the word Arquebus, A-R-C-H-I-B-U-S. Go in and put a ticket in, please. It's very important. You know, this Arquebus program that we're using to track everything right now is at the headquarters level as well. And what it's helping us do is track everything that NAVFAC is not doing for us. The warfare centers took this program after about a 3-year runtime for the admiral to come in and weigh in heavy on the NAVFAC and you're doing nothing for us as an organization. We're utilizing it for the same thing and trying to build that data pool. So please, if you see something wrong, a sink's clogged up, stop putting coffee grinds in them. Put the trouble ticket in. We don't know. We're in 9 buildings on 3 different naval bases with 7 facilities personnel. We need your help. If you identify it, we'll come fix it.
Here at Marmec, we're definitely spoiled having our own facilities embedded. And, you know, the Arquebus system is pretty simple to use. So absolutely, I 100% agree, you know, that we can get in and get those tickets to you.
We haven't talked about IT yet.
We haven't talked about IT.
No, we talked about cyber. We didn't talk about IT. 2 different people.
Oh, I thought it was cyber. The RMC net was IT. But go ahead. You want to expound on IT?
Yeah, I hope everyone's enjoying 156 brand new Xerox printers.
Yeah, I
see beautiful
them.
Thing they're going on
well.
Out there.
They work well.
I think we're above 90% of personnel having laptops. Sorry, telework was taken away. But we did get there, and that was a big push for us when COVID hit, was to get all the desktops converted to laptops. Got a big brand new shipment of 300 more in, and they're scheduling everyone to get their refreshed new laptops for those who have the older versions in the organization. You know, and one thing about IT that a lot of people don't understand, you know, we, through a IT budget line, pay Fleet Forces. There's 2 NMCI CTRs sit in the IT office. Gabe and brand new just checked in with Luis. They are NMCI employees. They are not Marmec employees. They follow our IT director's lead, but they are on site to help us with a lot of things. And for those folks over in the outlying CP200 on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday in your business office, we have IT people sitting over there to keep you from having to come here. How about that?
Yeah, I had no idea that you had IT folks sitting over at CP200. Kind of heading off some issue, a lot of issues.
You know, it's saving them that trip from coming over here. If I could load up equipment, mouses, keyboards, you know, monitors, and we have a little stash in a closet over there. And this way, the people at CB200 don't have to drive over here for it.
That's definitely a benefit to have. That's about our time. And I appreciate you sitting with us and going over these topics.
I was hoping for more. I heart this place.
I share the sentiment.
Thank you all very much.
Are you still with us? Good, you're crushing it. Do you need some more water? All right, let's get back into it. Your second wind is coming right up. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, which means it's the perfect time to grab a coffee, take a breath, and stop by your command counselor's office.
Hi, I'm Noelle Bice, one of the licensed professional counselors here at Marmec. Need someone to talk to? Join me for coffee with a counselor in my office at Building LF 18. It's a relaxed space where your mental health matters as much as your morning brew. Stop by, grab a cup, and let's chat. Because sometimes the best solutions start with a simple conversation.
Earlier this year, Marmec's Deputy of Small Business Programs, Stacy Cooper, and a team of industry volunteers helped put on the second annual Small Business Navy Expo, where private sector innovation meets public sector need. The event took place on March 13th and 14th at the Hampton Roads Convention Center. Businesses of all sizes were invited to attend the expo to hear from guest speakers, participate in seminars and discussion panels, and network with potential partners in the shipbuilding industry. One of those guest speakers was none other than Robert Yates, the head of Marmec's Contracts Department. Oscar was there to talk with Robert.
Good to see you.
And Stacy.
Nice to see you too, Oscar.
About the importance of events like these and how a rising tide lifts all ships. He started off by asking about what the expo offered in terms of naval readiness. Let's hear what they had to say.
So it offers a chance for our industry partners, especially small businesses, to see what's out there for them, try to get into the industrial base for the Navy. A lot of times, small businesses don't know how to navigate or see what's out there because they kind of in transition. And so events like this gets them to come meet with our large industry partners. And also they can meet with small industry partners to maybe team up, because we always tell them to try to subcontract first. Events like this just really highlights what the Navy does, and not just our Navy partners, but also Army and Air Force and Marines and Coast Guard. In terms of Navy readiness, this type of event really gets us more small businesses into the industrial base.
So it allows people to understand that as a customer, we offer a varied amount of requirements. Not everybody understands the things that we contract for, the needs of the Navy, and this allows us to kind of project, hey, we're a kind of a really big customer, and we've got so many different requirements. It's not just about, do you know how to weld? Do you know how to pipe fit? We've got so many different requirements, right on from buying paper to IT support to buying various materials and services. You know, when you have a $1 billion command like Marmec is, there's a lot of different availability of services and supplies that are out there. And in particular, being that this is a small business expo, it allows small businesses to see and ask questions about how they're able to get in on that and be a supplier and help meet the Navy's requirements.
He also asked Robert about networking opportunities, the variety of businesses in attendance, and the benefit of having large and small businesses all in one place.
Well, I think it's not just meant to educate all the different contractors. It's also meant to serve a little bit of the networking. You have larger companies like BAE. I think one of the major sponsors was Amentum, if I remember right. You have lots of different companies that are able to network and talk and say, how can I help meet the mission? Can I team? It offers the ability for everybody to be in one space, see what they do, see what they offer. Normally, you'd have a lot more research to figure these kind of things out. But when you have all the subject matter experts for a given company in a room, that kind of synergy allows for a lot of discussion and opens up doors and possibilities. So I think that that's a secondary effect of this.
With a successful second year under their belt, he asked them about what the future holds for small business and the Small Business Expo.
I think small businesses are going to continue to grow. The ideal scenario for most of them is that they keep getting bigger and they keep making networking and they are able to do more and more for the Navy. As far as I'm concerned, we keep pushing business to small businesses on purpose. You know, we want the competition. We want lots of businesses who can meet the Navy's needs, because like I said, when I was on stage, one deep isn't really good for us. We need competition. We need more than one person who can do the requirement, because at times the requirement can get large enough that one business cannot handle it. The other thing is it allows us to have market competition and keep prices as a customer where I'd like them.
You know, we're going to keep this moving in spite of the climate we're in this year. We still had a good turnout. I don't want it to get too big, because then it loses the intimacy for the networking and everything. But we're going to keep this going. As long as I'm around, we're going to keep this going.
Thank you, Stacy. We look forward to seeing what's in store at next year's expo. And Robert, we hope to see you there again, too.
If I'm invited back.
What keeps our sailors safe when they're doing the dirtiest, most dangerous jobs in the fleet? The answer might start in the SCBA shop. DCs are the Navy's first responders in the face of any damage or hazard, ensuring the safety and readiness of the ships and their crews. We had a conversation with DC2 Castillo and DC3 Williamson from the self-contained breathing apparatus shop to learn how they keep life-saving gear maintained, tested, and ready for action. It's behind-the-scenes work, but critical, because when you're entering a smoke-filled compartment, you want to be 100% sure your equipment won't fail you.
You hear a lot about DC. All of our instructions are written in blood. It clicks when you're taking something apart and it's messed up and you're like, oh, this could kill someone.
And now, over to Harrison for his conversation with DC2 Castillo and DC3 Williamson.
Okay, welcome back, everyone. My name is Harrison, and we have two sailors here from our SCBA shop. Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, so if we could just start with a couple of quick introductions. If you could just tell me your name and your rate.
DC2 Castillo.
I'm DC3 Williamson.
Okay, well, very nice to meet both of you. Could you guys tell me exactly why you wanted to join the Navy and why you guys chose DC as your rate?
I am third generation Navy. My great grandpa, my grandfather, and then a bunch of my aunts and uncles were in the Navy. So I wanted to join, plus school at the travel the world. I originally did not pick DC. I wanted to be an HM, but I would have been in debt for, I want to say, a year and a half. So I was like, just send me out the fastest that you can.
Right. I get it. Yeah. And I remember you telling us right before we started the show that you are from Guam and you depped out of Anchorage, Alaska.
Yes.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's definitely a flight.
Oh, yeah.
A long way. And how long have you been in the Navy?
I've been in 9 years.
9 years. Awesome. And what about you?
I joined the Navy because travel. Mm-hmm. Funny as it is, stuck on a ship in the yards.
A lot of water.
I was a firefighter before, so they were like, congrats, you can be a D-seaman, go fight fires on a ship.
I love it. If you guys could both tell me, you know, if a civilian were to ask you what you do in the Navy, like what a DC is, what would you tell them?
Pretty much a shipboard firefighter, working on maintenance, making sure that the ship is fit for anything, withstand anything, deal with fires, floodings, toxic gas, pretty much any casualty that you end up doing on a ship.
Yeah. We just mainly work on the equipment, prepping just in case the worst thing happens.
How long have you both been here at Marmac?
4 years. Too long.
Wow. Okay.
Coming up on six.
Oh, wow. Okay. Now, how does that work? Is it because as far as I know that like shore duty is like what? Usually three years?
Three.
So did you guys like choose to stay here at Marmac or?
I got extended to match my husband's PRD.
Okay.
But then I'm here on a pregnancy avail right now.
Oh, awesome. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
I got pregnant. My husband owed 6 years to his ship. So okay. I had a 6 years here.
Okay. Well, makes sense. You guys both are in the SCBA shop. That's correct, right?
Yes.
What exactly does SCBA stand for?
Self-contained breathing apparatus.
And what is that?
So we have two separate shops within the SCBA shop. We have bottles and then we have packs. For bottles, all we do is we hydro test the bottles every 5 years just to make sure that they're still within breathing air standards and everything like that. Make sure that any bottles that are unfit to be in the fleet are taken off so that ships are able to fight fires or casualties in case anything happens while they're out to sea.
Sounds like it's a very important job.
Yeah. PAX is very similar. The SCBA bottle goes in the SCBA pack. We have a lot more small moving parts. So every 3 years, we have to make sure nothing's getting damaged, make sure everything's still well lubricated, make sure the O-rings haven't popped. Just a lot of like small fixes.
Do you guys have any specific jobs that you do within the SCBA shop?
So I am the work center soup / ALPO. So I technically do all the supervising, make sure that the guys know what they do on a day-to-day basis. And I am their second set of eyes if ever they need to condemn a bottle or if they're unsure of how to do something.
Awesome. And what about you?
Just make sure all the equipment's still running.
Yeah.
I take on a work center soup-esque in that shop.
Okay. So every sailor has that moment when they realize the real impact of their job. When did that click for the both of you?
I want to say it was my first ever casualty on the ship where we had a major fuel oil leak and I was one of the first responders down there. That was eye-opening to me because this is what we do. This is what we're supposed to train for. And for me to actually witness it firsthand, it's kind of an overwhelming feeling, like a sense of accomplishment that, hey, I helped out so that the ship wouldn't flood or wouldn't sink or anything like that.
Wow. Yeah, that's something. That's high stress, but That's good that you knew what to do, though. What about you?
It was really different coming from civilian fire EMS.
Yeah.
To come, because it's really different. Mm-hmm. It was probably just like, you hear a lot about DC. It's all of our instructions are written in blood. Mm-hmm. And eventually it clicks when you're either like taking something apart and it's messed up and you're like, oh, this could kill someone.
What's something about your work that would surprise most civilians or even other sailors from other rates?
I'm honestly not sure. I know that a lot of people, when I say I'm a DC, they look at me all weird because of how tiny I am. And they're like, can you actually put on a whole ensemble and go down into the space and actually fight a fire? Or do you have a hard time with everything like that? But at the end of the day, it's like, this is my job. This is what I'm trained to do. So if I need to train other people to do what I do, then I'll be able to help them out.
It's probably training. Yeah. You don't realize how much people, like, you're going to have to talk to people being a DC.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Everyone from fire safety watches to IET drills. You just have to constantly be teaching people stuff. Yeah.
Everyone relies on you on the ship for training.
And going back here to the SCBA shop, how exactly does work come into the shop? Is that from the ships that Marimac works on and they are requesting assistance, or?
So all ships on the waterfront have to put in a job that gets screened through planning and then comes over to us. It's usually for bottles and packs that are going out of their hydro or function dates. So when they get screened, I don't know the entire process between screening to us actually getting the package. But when we do get the package, it's just a whole waiting game of when they want to drop off their bottles and packs. Sometimes we have to turn them away because they don't need to get worked on.
Okay.
But other times we'll just take their bottles and packs, especially if they're like a deployer, we'll rush their stuff for them
So
that they are at 100% accountability for everything on board.
And how long does that take? Like if a ship requested assistance, how long would that take?
It all depends on when we get the package in hand. If we get the package and they drop off, we can usually get the packs and bottles done the next day and they're ready for pickup the day after.
You want to add anything to that?
No, it's...
She's got it?
Yeah.
Sounds good. How long does it take to refill one bottle?
It honestly depends on what fill station you're using. If we're using our portable, our fill trailer that we have that we take on the drills, if we're using that, it takes two bottles at a time, and it usually takes about, I want to say, 5 to 10 minutes to fill up. But if they're using anything on the ship, it's all about
air pressure
and all that, and how much patience you have.
Makes sense. Okay. Going back to more career questions, do you guys see yourself staying in the Navy for 20 years and retiring, or what would you like to see yourself accomplish out of the Navy?
So I plan on getting out at the end of my contract in 2027. With the way the new advancement works for us, it's just not ideal for DCs to stay in, because the only way we can advance is going back to a ship or getting an A2P billet, which right now there's a lot of people fighting for the same billet, and we don't have enough manning for that. Or we have the manning, it's just that
we
don't have the billets available to fill those spots.
Yeah. I go back to a ship in next March. I got selected for orders, but yeah. So I'm in till 2029 right now, knowing I'm going to have to observe for, I think, another 3 years after that just to put on second, when I've already passed a test. I've done the whole thing.
Right.
Knowing that I won't be able to put it on until I reach a ship.
Looking back, would you choose DC again?
I like what I do.
Mm-hmm.
I am upset about the advancement, but ultimately, like, I've always taken pride in being a DC man. Is it the easiest job? No. When you're deep in the trenches, though, it's fun.
For the civilian equivalent of a DC, I'm assuming that would just be like a firefighter?
Yeah.
And so is that what you see a lot of people when they get out of the Navy, they become firefighters?
Not necessarily. I know that a bunch of the people that I knew that were DCs ended up doing something completely different.
Because you do so much like engineering work, and we don't actually go through an actual like firing academy like other branches. We do our A school, which is only about 3 weeks long. We don't have the same amount of training.
So we're not certified to be firefighters outside of the Navy.
And if you could go back and give advice to yourself as a new sailor, what would you say?
Just prove them wrong. Let them see that they can't judge you just based on your appearance.
Just breathe. It gets stressful, but just breathe. Be okay.
Right. Just stay calm. I like that. Are there any memories, any fun memories or fun moments within the SCBA shop or maybe wearing an SCBA? I remember wearing those and I did not like it. No. They're not fun to wear.
I want to say when she accidentally dropped the big Cal bottle that freaked all of us out.
Uh-oh.
It's a calibration bottle. It's about 900 pounds.
Oh, man.
It's how we stretch the jackets and get them ready in the morning. We needed a new head for the threads. It was already getting worn down, and I slightly just didn't torque it enough, and it went up, and it went right back down.
Oh, dang.
It left a dent in the floor.
Yeah, there's dent in our grates right now that the HTs had to fabricate a little bottle holder just so that it wouldn't happen again.
Is that talked about a lot in the shop?
Yes.
Yes.
Every morning.
Every morning. Oh, wow. Okay. Very memorable there. And talking about the other shops in Code 900, are there any shops that you would be interested in learning more about?
Probably welding.
Yeah.
Okay.
That are the MRs. I know they...
Like the fabrication and everything like
this
that.
This is the MRs, like bread and butter. This is like, they don't do a whole lot. Well, they do a lot on the ships, but like this is where they do all their like big work.
Okay. Nice. So now talking about Marimac, what is something that you both really enjoy about the command?
Being able to go home at the end of the day and not being on like a 24-hour duty shift like how it is on the ship, and all the time off that we do get to be able to spend time with our families.
Okay, well, DC2 Castillo and DC3 Williamson, thank you again so much for your time. We really do appreciate you guys coming in here for the podcast. And it was very nice getting to know both of you and just getting to know more about what the amazing work the SCBA shop does every day. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
On April 25th, 2025, Marimac held our change of command.
Ladies and gentlemen, Captain Dan Heminger, Commanding Officer, Mid-Atlantic Regional Maintenance Center.
We are excited to welcome aboard Captain Dan Heminger as Marimac's new commanding officer. We had a lot of fun capturing the conversation between Captain Heminger and our former commanding officer, Captain Jay Young, in Episode 5. Before the change of command, a surprise farewell celebration was held for Captain Young, and many members of the Marimac family showed up to wish him luck and thank him for his leadership over the past few years. We were able to speak with a few of the attendees to get their thoughts on Captain Young and what his time as commanding officer meant to them.
The captain is definitely one of the best COs I've ever had. Anytime you talk to him, regardless if it's in a professional or a personal manner, he gives you every bit of his attention. He never tries to push you away or shorten anything up. It is always, you are the most important person in the room at that moment, and he makes sure that you know that. I got to say it to him yesterday that the Navy needs good men and women to get to where we want to go in the future, and he is the perfect example of a great man that anyone can emulate themselves off of. And so I think the kind of person that he is going to be something that I will try to emulate moving forward.
I think he did an amazing job with that, supporting the sailors, the civilians. I think he supports everybody. It's across the board. Nobody feels like they're separated or they're not included in Marimac events. I think the captain did wonderful when it comes to that.
Well, I would just like to say that when you look at all the COs that run this United States Navy and the ones that I've had, dealing with Captain Young allows you to see that he is so personable with you, and he knows how to keep a profession at the same time, but just his sweet spirit, his caring spirit, and just words of encouragement when I'm always with him just discussing stuff, I can always rely on an honest and true answer from him, and that's made a big difference from my time being with him, and it will truly be missed, but cherished at the same time.
His dedication to the warships that we are charged with fixing, repairing, and providing tech assists for is second to none. So it's an infectious personality where steady hand, calm demeanor, but the goal is always to succeed. And he has led this command for darn near 3 years in a way that very few can do.
This tour has really been fantastic. I think one of the biggest accomplishments he's ever made in the entire Navy, he made on April 1st when they made him an honorary chief. And that still brings tears to my eyes because I know what a big deal that was. I think he's had to work harder at this job than he has had in the past. So it's been very challenging for all of us. But Norfolk has been wonderful to us as well. So he's very happy here.
And we'll close this segment with a quick conversation between Public Affairs Manager Chris Wyatt and the man now taking the helm, Captain Heminger.
Good morning, world's finest RMC. Captain Young, we recently bid farewell to him in a farewell luncheon. We had a lot of folks come out and communicate to him what his leadership meant to them. And I will say personally, I got the pleasure of serving with Captain Young. And I can honestly say he was an inspirational leader. He took the command to new heights, and I'm very excited to pick up where Jay left off.
Absolutely, sir. We are sad to see Captain Young leave, but we are excited to have you on board and looking forward to the new heights you're going to take us in the future. Speaking of turning the page, you sent out an all-hands email talking about your command philosophy and your guiding principles. Where else can we see that if we wanted to reference that moving forward?
Sure. Thanks, Chris. So my command philosophy and guiding principles, we've posted it at certain locations around the command. So you should be able to see that as you're walking around. We've also posted the document on our SharePoint. So you can access it there as well.
That's right, sir. For folks on SharePoint, the guiding principles are located right underneath your bio in Building LF18. Your guiding principles are located in the command break room. And for those working in CB200, they'll find it on Main Street. After you putting out your command philosophy and guiding principles, are we going to have an opportunity to hear from you in a town hall?
Okay. Yeah. Great question, Chris. And I am definitely excited to get out and interact with the command. I think first town hall is going to be in LF18 Granby. So that's coming up. Will be hopefully a pretty good turnout there to interact with the folks at the command. I'll be introducing sort of my background and having some frank conversations with the folks and talking about the command philosophy and opening it up to topics that are important to our command. Definitely looking forward to that. And then we do have plans on getting out to the other locations as well.
I think town halls are really the perfect venue for you to get up and close with the Marmite family. Them learn a little bit more about you as our leader and giving them an opportunity to ask questions as well. And like you said, we do have plans on going to different buildings and also going to the yards as a way to get you out and about and learn more about what we do day in, day out here at Marmac. That pretty much sums up our podcast. Is there any other questions that you have, sir?
Nothing. Thanks very much, Chris. And looking forward to, like I said, getting out and interacting with the command.
Thank you, Captain Heminger, for taking the time to spend with us today. Have a great day.
Thank you, Captain Heminger. Be sure to keep an eye out for more information about the upcoming town hall here at Building LF18. If you've made it this far, congratulations. The finish line is near. So grab a towel, book that massage, whatever your post-race routine is, you've earned it. Here's a sneak peek at what's coming up in the next episode. We'll sit down with members of the Gas Turbine and Diesel Shop to learn about the joint effort between our production and engineering departments to conduct a 2-alpha MPDE clutch assembly changeout and overhaul, the first time this has been done in our eye-level shops. And yes, we promise to translate all of that into English for those of you who don't speak fluent technician jargon. Exciting things are happening over at the new 3D printer shop, and we'll fill you on the future of 3D printing and ship repair. We continue our Sailor Spotlight series, this time checking in with members of the welding shop to hear about how they handle the heat. Our command counselor, Flora Papadimitriou, stops by to talk about Mental Health Awareness Month. We hear from the winner of the NAVSEA Commander's Innovation Award, Carl Busch. And we talk OPSEC awareness with Operations Security Manager, Charles Miller. That's a wrap on this episode of the Maintainer Podcast. But before we go, I'll pass it off to a few of our shipmates to help close us out.
Okay. This is Y2 Lopez.
This is DC3 Spilik.
This is MM3 Spino.
The Maintainer Podcast
is produced by the Marmac Public Affairs Office.
Follow us on Facebook and LinkedIn.
Follow us on Facebook and LinkedIn
by searching Mid-Atlantic Regional Maintenance Center.
You can also check out the Marmac News and Event page on SharePoint.
to stay current with everything happening around the command.
If you have an idea for a future episode,
or if your team is doing something the command needs to hear about,
drop us a line at Public Affairs.
We'd love to hear from you.
Until next time, fair winds and following seas. I'm Jared Patch, and this has been the Maintainer Podcast. Over and out.
If you have an idea or a future for a future